Welcome to Ominous Ones. I'm Tara.
And I'm not Tara.
We're a true crime podcast that covers missing people, murders, and all things ominous.
Question.
What?
In the intro, when you did with Josh and Alex and Jen, did they say I'm not Tara or did they use our names?
I think you're the only person that says you're not Tara.
Oh.
If you like what you hear, make sure to like and subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. This case is about Lindsay Buziak. She was born November 2nd, 1983, to parents Evelyn and Jeff Buziak, who had another daughter named Sarah. Evelyn and Jeff split up in the 1990s, and Evelyn was given custody of the two girls. In 2006, Lindsay passed her real estate exam, and by 2008 was working as a real estate agent near British Columbia. At that time, she was dating 27-year-old Jason Zalo. So I don't know how to say his last name. She was dating Jason, who was also a real estate agent, along with a lot of his family members who were doing really well for themselves. According to Jeff, which I'm not sure how true this is, he said Jason's mom Shirley was overbearing on the couple and too involved in their relationship. She had even bought them a lakefront house to control where they lived. But according to Shirley, while Jason and Lindsay would stay at the lake house, she said, quote, "The house on the lake that I own is a family home. It was never bought for Lindsay and Jason," unquote.
I know how overbearing mother-in-laws can be, so
Well, it seems like Lindsay's dad is the only one who makes these claims.
I'm not discounting it.
Fair. Lindsay took a job working with Jason's family, and the couple moved into a condo that was owned by his family. Jeff said that in 2007, Lindsay visited him in Calgary and told him she wasn't happy with Jason and was debating breaking up with him. But as far as Jason knew, they did get in fights sometimes, but said that they were fine, and as he didn't think that they were going to break up or it was even close to that. In January of 2008, 24-year-old Lindsay got a call to her cell phone from a 778 area code number about someone looking for a house. It was a woman with an accent she couldn't identify who said her and her husband had a $1 million budget and needed a new house.
That'd be a nice cash out.
Right? Lindsay wasn't a higher up at the company, so she questioned how this woman had her personal number and why she was the one being contacted for it. The woman said they either knew someone who she had helped buy a house, or they had given her Lindsay's and they had given her Lindsay's number, or the woman got it from a quote friend of her husband's. I saw both reported, but I'm like, no one's sure, and you'll see why in a minute. Lindsay saved the number in her phone as $1 million, which I feel like is fair.
Yeah.
This couple seemed to be in a hurry to get a house, so an appointment was made for them to view a house she found on February 2nd, which was a few days after the first call had been made. Lindsay told Jason and her dad that the call bothered her and she wasn't sure if she should go through with it. Jason told her she should, since her commission on that much money would be really good, and he offered to handle the viewing, but either the woman or Lindsay turned him down for it.
So, I'm like, I get being like, yeah, that's gonna be a nice payout on this, but she already feels weird about it. And not only that, but wouldn't you take down their information, like name, current address, phone number, like some sort of very verifying information? And then you could tell everybody, like, oh, this is who I'm going to meet up with or whatever, right?
I feel like you would absolutely tell at least one person everything you had. And I'm like, I don't know if it was me, like you said, I would write it all down and be like, this is like the address, and this is the lady's number, and this is her name, and any
Yeah.
other things that I knew.
Especially if you were already weirded out by it, and then let's say the lady was the one that was like, no, we don't want your boyfriend, we want you.
That's even weirder to be
Yeah.
like, so I'm gonna write all this down. But said it wasn't because Lindsay was scared, but because that day Lindsay had plans to go to Vancouver, and Shirley said that she could handle it so she wouldn't have to cancel her plans, but Lindsay turned her down and said she was going to handle it. So Jason then offered to go, but said that he was going to wait in his car outside of the house. Before going to the viewing, Lindsay called around to friends and clients to see who had shared her number, but couldn't find anyone that had. The day of the showing, the unknown woman called Lindsay's house, but she wasn't there. Jason talked to her and offered her Lindsay's cell phone number, but the woman said she already had it. Jason said the accent was, quote, broken Spanish. Which I'm like, Lindsay, I think, just described it as she couldn't tell where the woman was from. Later that day, Lindsay and Jason went to lunch and they paid the bill at 4:24 p.m. and then left the restaurant in their own cars. Lindsay didn't go to the viewing house yet. They think that she went home to change, and Jason went to a mechanic shop to pick up one of his friends. Lindsay stopped at her office and spoke to the receptionist, who said she was, quote, freaked out about the showing, but she left to handle it anyway. Jason stayed at the shop longer than they had planned, so he texted Lindsay and said he was going to be late. They left there at 5:30, and the showing was set up to for 5:30. On the way, Jason called Lindsay for directions to the house, and during the call, she told him, quote, oh, I've got to go, they're here, unquote, and then she texted him the address. So I'm like, is another thing. If I told you I was freaked out about something,
When you have the address beforehand.
yeah, I'm like, I would be like, so this is where it's at. Like, I do want you to wait outside, and I can't believe he was late. Like, I know if you told me you were freaked out about going somewhere to do anything, I was like, I'm gonna be there. I would be on time.
That would be early for sure. Like, don't know. That's weird.
I could even be like, let's ride together.
Yeah. Even her, co-workers, they weren't like, oh, what's the address, or didn't get any information. She's like, I'm freaked out about this. And everybody's like, it's fine, just go by yourself.
So it seems like everyone's kind of like, well, I mean, you'll handle it though, right? The house the viewing was at was in a cul-de-sac with four houses, and it was only supposed to be the woman who called showing up. At 5:30, witnesses said they saw a, quote, 6-foot-tall white man with dark hair and a blonde-haired woman between 35 and 45 years old wearing a distinctively patterned dress, unquote. The couple was walking down the cul-de-sac towards the house. They saw Lindsay and the three started talking, with witnesses saying Lindsay was acting like she didn't personally know the couple, and then the three went inside. 10 minutes later, Jason showed up to the house with his friend at 5:40 p.m. and saw Lindsay's BMW in the driveway. Jason says through the glass on the front door, he saw someone walk by. They stayed in the car for 10 minutes and then drove down the street to wait so he wasn't a, quote, nosy, interfering boyfriend, unquote. After another 10 minutes, Jason texted Lindsay and asked if everything was okay, but she never opened the message. They waited another 20 minutes and then Jason decided to go check it out. He tried the front door, but it was locked, which I'm like, is really weird in a showing. He looked through the front door glass and saw Lindsay's shoes sitting in the hall, but no one was coming to the door he was knocking on. He rang the doorbell at least 10 times and called the listing agent for a way in or the garage passcode, but he couldn't get a hold of anyone. Then he called 911 and got his friend to try to find a way in. Jason told 911 his girlfriend was meeting a client that was from out of town and said Lindsay asked him to, quote, kind of follow her because she was kind of scared, unquote. He also told 911 he could see her shoes through the glass and he had seen a guy walk by the door when he first got there. He helped his friend jump the fence and into the backyard where he found the back door open. Jason told 911 they were going to go inside and then he hung up on him. His friend went through and unlocked the front door for Jason, and once they were both inside, Jason went up the stairs and found Lindsay in the master bedroom. She was laying in a pool of blood. Jason called 911 again around 6:11 p.m. and they got there pretty quickly.
How many minutes was that before, between his first call and his second call?
I'm not sure. Well, I'm like, when he, what was it? He got there at 5:40 and then waited 40 minutes before he went to the front door.
So 6:20-ish.
Which is, no, 'cause around 6:11 he called again. I don't know. The timelines are all weird. It was fast. Like, it seems like he called, went in, and then immediately called.
Okay, that's just what I, just because then eliminates him as a suspect, like.
Yeah, I don't know. Jason's friend said they went in and saw, quote, bloody footprints and Lindsay Lane in a pool of blood, unquote. Jason said he had touched her, checking for a pulse, and started CPR. The cops think she was killed between 5:38 p.m. and 5:41 p.m. Around 5:41, her phone made an accidental call, which they think could have happened in a struggle. Lindsay was pronounced dead on the scene from multiple stab wounds, but she didn't have any defensive wounds. All of her stuff was still there, and she wasn't sexually assaulted.
That's insane. Who did she call during that time on accident?
I don't know. It just said her phone made a call. Jason and his friend were taken into custody to be questioned, but after checking their alibi, they were let go. Cameras saw them at the mechanic shop, and the unknown couple was seen going to the house by the neighbors. Jason has been questioned a few times, and he passed a polygraph. No DNA, fingerprints, or evidence was found at the house or on Lindsay. It was so clean, and they got away so quickly, the cops speculate that the killers knew what they were doing, and this wasn't the first time they had done this. They theorized the couple was going to leave out the front door, but Jason was there and walking up, so they quickly left out the back door, and that's why it was left open. The house backed up to a street, so they assumed they had left over the fence, and maybe they had a car waiting on the other side, which makes sense since they walked down the
Yeah.
cul-de-sac and didn't drive. The cops had the number of the unknown woman, but either she gave a fake name or Lindsay had never written it down, so they tried to track down whose phone number it was. They found it was a burner phone bought in Vancouver a few months before Lindsay was killed and had only been used to call her phone.
Wow.
The phone was bought by Paulo Rodriguez, which they think was a fake name. An address linked to the phone number went to a business that they think had no connection, and whoever this was had just picked an address and it happened to go to a business. After the murder, the phone was disconnected and never used again. They pinged it and saw that it was taken on a ferry from Vancouver the day before Lindsay was killed, but they didn't get anything else from it. Jason's family had links to the cul-de-sac the house was on. It was named after one of his mom's friends who was on the street an hour before Lindsay was killed. He was there checking on construction that was happening there, and the cops said there's no link between Jason, his family, and the murders.
That's
Murder.
insane. I think I have heard this, just bits and pieces of it, not a whole lot of information, but I'm pretty sure I have heard about the story. Wasn't it like wood flooring too, through most of the house? And then there were something happened, and people are going there now to like asking the boyfriend for showings and other people for showings just to go take pictures in the spot that she was killed in.
I didn't see any of that, but maybe. Dateline did an episode of this, and they found that 8 weeks before she was killed, Lindsay tried to get a hold of her ex-boyfriend's friend who was in Calgary, which I'm not sure if they made contact, but on January 22nd, so right before this, the friend was arrested in the largest drug bust in Alberta history. People thought Lindsay's murder might have been over her being an informant on that case, but detectives said she wasn't involved in it at all. They think, well, this was a contract hit. It was for personal reasons and not something like cartel-wise or drug-wise. They're like, this is someone wanted her dead for personal reasons. The same year she was killed, one of Lindsay's friends said she got a call late at night from an unknown number. It was a woman with an accent she couldn't identify. She said she doesn't remember what was said, though, which I'm like, well, that's weird.
Then why bring it up?
She remembered Lindsay saying her caller had a weird accent. While that scared her, she thought maybe it had something to do with Lindsay, so she called the number back 20 to 30 times. When it was finally answered by, who do you think?
Jason.
By Jason's mom, Shirley. She asked Shirley why she called her that late and how she had her number, but Shirley said she was trying to get a hold of her secretary who had the same name as the friend, and Jason must have put her number in her phone for some reason.
Bullshit.
Shirley now says none of that happened, and no one knows if the cops looked into it. So that's just Lindsay's friend saying that, and Shirley's like, that conversation never happened, and I never called her. In 2017, Lindsay's dad had a website up where someone commented, quote, "I killed Lindsay and stupid cops will never prove it," unquote. But as far as I could find, it was a hoax, but there's really not a lot of information about it. The Capitol Daily requested the case files be made public in 2020. Some of it came out, but there was a lot still redacted, and we learned the cops knew the suspects had two phones, the burner and a Vancouver phone that had checked the voicemail on the burner. It also showed there were over 10 calls between the burner phone and Lindsay's phone. The Capitol said the cops know who the phone really belongs to, but they don't want to share that information. The cops had also found that internet searches for Lindsay had been happening, like, right before she was killed, and that there were, quote, "violent criminals," unquote, in her Facebook friend list. They also mentioned the caller had a strong Mexican accent instead of an unknown one. In 2021, the cops said new DNA advancements had given them new leads, and after that, I can't find anything new, but I do think the case is still open.
Yes, I was looking for those pictures. This, I'm pretty sure, is the same one that I was seeing a few months ago on Facebook. And yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. And the boyfriend was getting some of the calls, and he would go to show the same house, and he would like the people would take off and be like, "Oh, we're gonna go look at the house," and then he would be like, "They've been gone for a while," and they would be like up in there posing in the room where she died. And there was another instance that when he would like walked into that room with them to show them the house, they were like, "Is this where she died at?" and started taking pictures, and he was in the photos, and he's like, "Fuck this, I'm done. Get the fuck out. Like, we're not doing this anymore."
I'm surprised he would even show the house. So I'm like, I obviously the house still needs to be sold, but I don't know if it was a house like you were brutally murdered in, I would never go in there. I would
Yeah.
just be like, well, I'm gonna let someone else handle this. Like, this is pretty sensitive.
Yeah, facts.
I didn't hear any of that though. That's crazy. Lindsay's dad feels like the cops dropped the ball, but is doing what he can to make sure the case isn't forgotten. He thinks Jason's family was behind it. He has said Shirley told him Lindsay saw something, quote, "she shouldn't have," unquote, but that only came from him, and Shirley was like, "I never said that to him."
She seems to have a lot of conversations she never says to anybody.
And well, I'm like, it's weird because her dad seems set that Shirley did it or was behind it. And then, yeah, and then with that call to Lindsay's friend, I'm like, why doesn't her friend remember what was said? And then Shirley's like, none of that ever happened. I'm like, I don't know. There's like weird stories with all of them. Lindsay's mom doesn't agree with Jeff and doesn't think Jason's family is involved and understood why Shirley later took legal action against Jeff and his claims. But I'm not sure what happened with any of that.
I mean, if I was rich and you were trying to say that I had something to do with your daughter's murder, I would get a lawyer involved too in case anything came from it. Like, first off, I'd be like, I need legal assistance.
I think she also sued a newspaper or the media in some way because they were posting his claims and like making it sound like she was guilty. And I think she involved him in the lawsuit, but it was all pretty closed off. Which, yeah, I'm like, I don't blame her. If I
Yeah.
had money, I'd be like, well, I'm gonna shut this down because I'm not going to jail just because you think I did it.
Yeah. I mean, even if, like, the risk of going to jail, like, they're not looking into me or whatever, I would still get legal counsel just to be like, I don't know what's gonna come of this.
Yeah. And then I'm like, with the Capitol Daily, if what they said about the cops is true and what they know, it seems like they might know who did it.
Yeah.
Because they found the phone that had checked the voicemail on the burner phone and they knew the accent and all of that. I'm like, it sounds like they know a lot more than they're letting on. But I'm like, it's been so long. Why haven't they done anything? It was in
Yeah.
2008, and then in 2020. The Capitol Daily got the stuff released, but I'm like, they've had quite a while to do something with all this.
Yeah, unless they were paid off because it was from a rich parent.
Well, the case is still open, so who knows? Maybe something will come from it. All right, well, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you guys next time.
Bye.